I've always liked maps from when I was very little. Of course, once you get a little bit older and you discover that the maps are very specific representations and they very quietly and covertly embed all sorts of prejudices and all sorts of political histories, it became that much more interesting. And the Admiralty charts are essentially maps of the sea routes, but also subsurface possible dangers and obstacles and various other information, such as, for example, where cables are laid, dolphins and whales, pirates, or in fact, going through the Red Sea and the Persian Gulf, also things like munitions dumps. So you sit there and think, who dumped those munitions? When was it dumped? I'm Lale Khalili, and I'm a professor of international politics at Queen Mary University of London. And I am the author of Sinews of War and Trade, Shipping and Capitalism in the Arabian Peninsula. The book is fundamentally about the way that maritime transportation in its most modern form, so since the end of the Second World War, has transformed political and social relations, have transformed cityscapes, have transformed harbors and ports, and have interconnected the world in ways that we don't anticipate. So it's about the role of maritime transportation in capital accumulation, if you want the shortest little tag for it. But in a way, I wanted it to be a lot more. So I wanted it to be about places and things. And it is about sea routes and ports, but it is also about people that have made these sea routes and ports possible, that work in these ports or aboard ships. And it is about the movement of cargo and how that movement of cargo, whether it's petroleum or finished products that are being produced all around the world, have actually shaped social relations. Because I was interested in tracing the origins of the kind of a maritime world today in the Western Indian Ocean in a longer history, I had to do archival work. But in addition to that, I also wanted to make sure that I included contemporary accounts. And so I had a lot of port visits and I did some quite brief ethnography aboard two container ships. But I was also a little bit more unconventional here, because one of the things that one finds when one begins to research the Arabian Peninsula is that it's a much more difficult thing to research popular voices and subaltern voices. And I tried to get that through, for example, collecting as many memoirs as I could of lefty Arabs of various backgrounds who had been in the Arabian Peninsula at the sort of the formative moment for this maritime world. But also, in addition to memoirs, actually digging up novels and short stories that are written about these ports. And I tried not to sort of place an epistemological priority on, let's say, archival material over the oral narratives or on historical texts over stories. And I think that that, in part, allowed me to sort of welcome voices that otherwise are absent in the archives themselves. It was really, really important for me that this story didn't just become about merchants, capitalists, and experts. There's a lot of more popular vernacular narratives about infrastructures or about histories of ports, which tend to be heroic narratives of great men doing great things and establishing great places. And what I really wanted to do was to actually talk about the everyday work of the people who keep these places going. The easiest way to split it was to split it by the kind of work that people did, but not only because the work that people do on board a ship is different than the work that they do on the docks, but because also under the current conditions of labor, limitations on organization aboard ships are far stricter than there are on dockside labors, in part because people are at sea with a much smaller group of people than you would find on a dock, in part because captains are pretty much sovereigns aboard their own ships and can do pretty much anything, but also because of the way that labor structures, because of, for example, flags of convenience, convenience or processes of deregulation have bifurcated in such a way that shipboard labor often is divided between captains from better off places and crew members from the global south. The ability of labor to organize, the ability of the workers on the docks and the decks to organize or not was also something that I wanted to point to. And I think the conditions, the context of their work mattered greatly. And I was hoping that I actually managed to bring that context out a little bit. Contingency is a condition of life at all times, but especially during modern times, and especially living in a place which has seen such massive and radical transformation over the course of the last 100 years. And so that element of contingency was something I really wanted to get at. So some of the things that I point to, for example, are the really unbelievably organized and active labor force in the 1960s, Abu Dhabi or Qatar, which is today, whenever I give talks to Middle Eastern or audiences familiar with the Middle East, it always comes as a kind of an unbelievable thing to people because of the ways in which the countries of the Gulf have managed to really suppress labor organizations. So the contingency, again, of labor organization, or the rise and fall of ports, or the transformations in physical landscapes. But the element of ephemerality and contingency in particular comes into play when we look at sea routes. Because, of course, the sea does not hold a path upon it. And yet, there seem to be these sea routes that have existed for some, even for centuries. And so I wanted to know how to reconcile the idea of an ephemeral route upon the sea, which changes with waves and currents, with the idea that somehow people think about these fixtures, these infrastructures, as something durable and lasting. And the example about the channel to Jebel Ali port in Dubai is a really good one. The sea there is extremely shallow, and in fact, there are underwater currents that constantly change the contours of the seabed. And so that it has to constantly be dredged and maintained because otherwise ships are going to ground there. I'm definitely not the first person to point to the fact that ports and harbors have changed utterly. One example that I always give is the city of Marseille. It's my favorite city in France. It's a living, vibrant, incredible port. When you go into Marseille, the heart of the city is the Vieux Port, which is the old, old port, which used to be when the sailing ships would come into Marseille. But once the age of sail ended and switched to steamships, a new port was created a couple of kilometers to the west, to the north. And that port, in turn, over the course of the last, say, 20 years, or so, has been replaced by a port about 40 kilometers further west. And the port that functioned as the kind of the main cargo port for about 100 years is now a cruise ship port. And then the real port being really out of reach of any Marseillaise person without, you know, the express wish to go to that new cargo port. It's quite a significant transformation, and one sees it everywhere. One sees it in the Gulf, in fact, very easily, very directly. And the result, of course, of this transformation and the port constantly shifting further and further away from city centers is that the very natural spatial barrier has been erected. Most ports are today securitized. But even if you don't have a securitized port, the very sheer distance of these ports from city centers means that a barrier has been erected between the workers on the ports and the ordinary people of the city. Part of the reason that dockers have had such radical histories and have been able to be such militant workers and strikers has been because they've often depended historically on the support of the public for their strikes or for their labor mobilization. And so in the absence of a proximity to the city, that of course changes the ability of the dockers, not only to be able to strike or mobilize, but also to tell their stories. I think the voices are there. It's just that perhaps we don't hear them. I mean, a lot of the people who work on the ports are Punjabis, or they write and speak in Malayalam, in languages of South India. And I do wonder if there are not texts out there in languages I could not access. So perhaps not there with the same frequency as before, because the sea does not hold the same romance as the Age of Sail, but I'm sure there must be narratives out there. So I was raised in a socialist family, and it's a bit of a surprise that it took me about half a century to get to writing about political economy. My first two books have been about political violence in some ways. The first one about how Palestinians commemorate political violence, the second one about counterinsurgencies. And after finishing the second book, I actually really didn't want to work on violence anymore. I think that it was a devastating research project in terms of its emotional effects on me, because I was interviewing people that had been political prisoners or had been tortured by various actors, including the US and Israeli militaries. And it was a really quite grim subject to research. So I was looking for something else to do. The joke was that I was going to research bars and beaches in Beirut. And I actually did end up writing an article about the ways in which Palestinians from the camps move around in the beaches and the Corniche in Beirut. But it wasn't really something that I wanted to do. Around the same time, a friend who worked for International Transport Workers Federation approached me and said, do you want to do some research on the Arabian Peninsula? Because we, our research is really focused on China and East Asia, and it would be really interesting to, you know, do a bit more work on the Arabian Peninsula. And I thought, well, why not? So I applied for some funding, and I was very surprised to get it. In some ways, it has been kind of a savior for me in allowing me to research something very different than what I had done before, to become a student again, in a sense.
Laleh Halili's book, Sinews of War and Trade, Shipping and Capitalism in the Arabian Peninsula, is out now from Verso. Thinkbelt.org/interstitial has recommendations for further reading and more episodes. Listen and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. If you like the show, share it, rate it, spread the word. Thanks. Sound design is by Sam Clapp. I'm David Huber. More next week.